cannot, if you are not saved, you cannot truly accomplish anything righteous. If you are saved, that is the only way you can truly be righteous and be producing fresh water, as it were. I would like you guys to join me in James chapter 3, starting in verse 13. We'll read, and then we will get into this. So, James chapter 3, starting in verse 13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds, and the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So we've been looking at various tests in the book of James, tests of true faith, and here we come to the test of wisdom. And just right off the bat, James asks the question in verse 13, who among you is wise and understanding? Now, when we think of being wise or understanding, we're not talking about physical brain power or even smart living, wise choice, and intelligent choices in living. It's about being skilled and knowledgeable when it comes to spiritual truths. And most importantly, who God is. Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. That is where we truly find and begin to have wisdom and understanding. Now, let's have a good reminder here. What is the fear of the Lord? Anybody? What's the fear of the Lord? Yes. What? The beginning of knowledge, yes. But, like, what does it mean to fear God? What's the fear of, what is the fear of the Lord? What is that? I see you. Yes? Yes, to be in awe of him. It's, as Dad likes to say, a delightful, dreadful, reverential awe of God. Love those words. To be understanding is to know who God is. To be wise is to live according to that knowledge. So, we have letter A, the question, do you have fresh water? See, when we come to this passage in verse 13, it seems like James has made like a leap in topics, but really he hasn't. He's just been discussing that you need to be bearing fruit with your life. If you have bitter water within your cistern, within your well, or whatever it is, then you're going to be spewing out bitter water. If you have fresh water, you're going to be spewing out fresh water. And so he says, so, who among you is wise and understanding? Who has fresh water? And then he says, prove it. That's number one, if you do. But how do we prove it? Well, he continues on in verse 13. Let him show by his good behavior. So when we talk about, that's letter A, good behavior. So when we talk about the word good, I think this has largely been lost in society today, because what is the classic conversation you can have with anyone? Hey, so-and-so, how are you doing today? I'm good. It means nothing. It's just a phrase that you say almost out of habit. It doesn't really mean anything. But when we look at good in the Bible, we're considering something that is beautiful, something that is perfect, something that is viewed by God as exquisite, without flaw. That's what we're talking about when we talk about good. So when we have that combined with good behavior, we're talking about righteous living. We're talking about living a life that is good in the eyes of God. So we need to have a proper perspective when we're thinking about good, because then that helps us figure out what James is talking about as he carries on. Because he doesn't just let it be, let him show by his good behavior. No, he goes on. We have letter I there, deeds. He says, let him show by his good behavior his deeds. James is spelling this out, even though he doesn't have to. Behavior is made up of deeds, actions, accomplishments, works. But then finally, we also have letter A, those deeds are in the gentleness of wisdom. So an inappropriate perspective that one can have when it comes to gentleness is this idea that if you are a gentle person, you are meek, you are you're delicate, you're treating things very softly, very carefully. At least that's the way it can be seen a lot of times. Now, it's possible to be acting in a manner that is soft and tender towards something if you're being gentle, but gentleness doesn't involve just at its core trying to treat something with utmost carefulness. No, gentleness involves using exactly the right amount of force in a given situation, the right amount of force when you're talking or interacting with another person. Really, the word behind it is kind of has a dual meaning. Not only is it talking about using the right amount of force, but it's also talking about being humble, which really, if you think about it, makes sense. Say you're talking to somebody, and you're carrying on a conversation with them, and you've been noticing something that they've been doing in their life that you think might be an issue. Maybe they're doing something, you're wondering whether or not they have the right heart motivation. Maybe you think that they're sinning, and you're trying to think about how you want to bring it up to them. Well, how you're going to bring that up should largely depend on what kind of person they are. Are they people that just like you to say things at face value? Are they people who like you to be very careful with how you word things? Maybe prelude your discussion of what you think might be a sin issue with, hey, I've wanted to let you know that I really care about you, and I love you, and I really enjoy our relationship and our friendship, and I just want to let you know I've been concerned as I've been, you know, and you go on and on and on. Or some people, you just get straight to the point, and you're just like, hey man, I've just been noticing that you've been doing this, and that concerns me. Could you let me know why you're doing that? See, there's two different ways you can go at having a conversation with someone, and all depends on whether you know what they're like. How do they talk? How do they handle conversation? How do they handle criticism? How do they handle praise? And the only way you're going to know what someone's like is if you're paying attention, right? And so if you're truly going to be gentle, you're seeking to help someone else and use the right amount of force that you need, use the right kind of techniques when you're interacting with someone to have a discussion with them, you're going to be placing them before yourself because you're paying attention to who they are, what they're like, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, what they appreciate, what they value. You're going to be paying attention to all of those things so that you can bless them as you're interacting with them. That's the only way that you can truly be fully gentle with someone is if you understand them. And in order to really get to understand someone in the right way, you're valuing them and you are putting yourself underneath them. Because if you're not being humble, sure, you could know what they're like, but you don't care. You just act however you want to. You just talk however you want to talk. You just interact with people however you want to interact with them. You couldn't care less about what kind of person they are or what they enjoy. So gentleness involves a combination of not just using the right amount of force when you're having a discussion or interacting with someone, but it involves humility and valuing someone as more important than yourself. 1 Peter 3:15 says this, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence." Peter's talking about you need to be prepared to defend the gospel, to defend your faith against people who are going to attack it. And you're probably going to need to be very, very strong in your presentation of what you believe. You're going to need to be very firm with your convictions. And yet you can still do that in a spirit of gentleness. And then you also have the ultimate example, Christ. Matthew 11:29, Jesus says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." So some practical application. Do you know others well enough that you know what they're like? Do you even know or understand people at all? Further than that, do you interact with them and do you purposefully push their buttons so you know them well and so you try and just mess with them? And sometimes that can be done in good fun, but other times you do it just because you're getting some satisfaction out of it and you don't care about them. You just know what they're like and you're going to use that to your own advantage. There's two ways that can go. How are you interacting with others? Are you placing them and their interests above yourself and using gentleness, the right amount of force, the right kind of discussion with them? Or are you just breezing by what they're like and just acting however you want to do in the moment? Are you seeking to engage with them gently? That's what it looks like in this first section, this first verse. That's what it looks like to be wise and understanding. But then we have letter B. James moves on from that initial statement discussing if you're wise and understanding, you are going to be having good behavior with deeds that are expressing gentleness in wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, he says. So we have letter B, the condition, what's actually in your heart. Number one, if you have bitter jealousy. You ever tasted something that just leaves just this bitter taste in your mouth? And it's not the good kind. It's not like, I know many of you are coffee lovers out there. It's not the coffee bitter taste. We're talking something that wasn't meant to be eaten, bitter taste. That's what this is describing here, something that just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But it's conjoined with jealousy. And what's really fascinating about this word has a flip side to it. Oftentimes it's translated in the New Testament, not as jealousy, but as zeal, passion, being incredibly driven for something. So I find it really interesting that this is being translated towards jealousy. Why would a word that sometimes is used for the word zeal be used and translated as jealousy? Well, it can only be one thing. When we're talking about this here, we're talking about you have zeal for your own desires. You know what you want, and you're passionate about them. And so, combining these things together, bitter jealousy, you are absolutely passionate about the things that you desire, and if you don't get them, it's going to cause bitterness in your heart and probably going to leave bitter tastes in others as well. Then you have number two, if you have selfish ambition. This one is reasonably self-explanatory. You're pursuing your own gain. So it's not so much this is what you're like when it comes to what you want, but this is what you're aspiring towards. This is like maybe a little bit more specific in what you want. You're pursuing or aspiring to have others look up to you. You're focused on elevating yourself in the eyes of others, or maybe even you don't really care what others think about you, you just want yourself to feel impressive, even if other people don't. Though usually those tend to go hand in hand as you continue to inflate your ego if you carry on in that way. So those two attitudes, bitter jealousy and selfish ambition, they're within the context, though, of having good behavior, because James says, but if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. So what he's talking about is, if you're trying to have good behavior, if you're trying to act in a spirit of gentleness, the gentleness that comes supposedly from wisdom, if you're trying to be good in your behavior, but you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, then, number one, you are being arrogant and you are lying. Now, I want to pause real quick before we get to those, because I want us to consider some more practical elements of having bitter jealousy and selfish ambition. On the bitter jealousy side, when I was reflecting on this, I was considering just my own experience in youth group. And I know one thing that I wanted, and by God's grace, I had. What I wanted in youth group, one of the main things I wanted in youth group was friendship. I wanted to have friends. And I didn't just want to have a group of people that hung around me. I wanted to have relationships with people. I wanted to be able to not just enjoy things with other people, but I wanted to be able to talk about things with people. And I wanted to be able to talk about the Word of God. I wanted to be able to talk about how they were doing, what was going on in their lives, what's going on in my life. Maybe I can help you out with something that's going on. Maybe we can go through this together. We can talk about it. We can pray about it. All those were good aspirations. And yet, as much as I wanted friendship, I didn't get a lot of it in high school. And that's something that I really longed for. And yet, by God's grace, I did have many good, solid friendships, but I always wanted more. And when I didn't get it, especially when I didn't get it with the people that I wanted friendships with, that began to upset me. I began to develop bitter jealousy because I had a passion for wanting to have friendship, and yet because I wasn't getting some of the friendship that I wanted, I was upset. And I began to sin in my heart because I couldn't get what I wanted. And I would say that that probably led, reflecting back on it, to many times where I began to estrange myself from people that weren't giving me what I wanted. Or I was beginning to estrange myself from people that I didn't want to hang around. I wanted to hang around with this group and try and be good friends with this group, and this person was trying to be a friend to me or wanted me to be their friend, and I didn't care. I was just focused on my own agenda. That's bitter jealousy. It causes problems in your own heart, causes problems in other people's heart. That goes with relationships too. Really longing for a relationship with someone, perhaps seeing other people are getting it and you're not, or anything along those lines, and it's causing you to be bitter and jealous and upset in the absolutely incorrect way because people are getting things that you want. That's sinful. Or how about the other side? We've got selfish ambition. And in this one, if we're looking at the context of good deeds, the first example that came to mind for me was taking care of chairs, helping set up, helping take things down. I love watching all of you guys put chairs up and take chairs down. It's like, sometimes, it's not been super bad, but every once in a while, if you like see this guy with just like 16 chairs on either side of his arms, it's like, yes! It's like, you know, in general, that's fine. But pause for reflection a little bit, maybe not so much with stacking chairs, but when we've got youth events going on, and there's setup that needs to happen, there's perhaps, you know, people need a bunch of helpers, hey, I want a bunch of volunteers. One, when does your hand shoot up to volunteer? And why does your hand shoot up to volunteer? Do you only volunteer when certain other people volunteer? Do you only volunteer because you want other people to be watching you volunteer? Doesn't matter who's volunteering, you just want to be noticed. Or perhaps on the other side of things, are you wanting to be someone who is noticed for being the one who is spiritual? Not so much someone who's always just, you know, spouting off very, you know, spiritual phrases and spiritualizing everything. Not that kind of spiritual. Just simply, do you want to be known as someone who is reading their Bible, someone who is talking about the things that they've been learning, someone who's really enjoying time here in youth group, is really enjoying part of being the church, and yet behind all of that, your ultimate motive is not for the sake of God's glory, it's for your own. There can be a very subtle shift in those kinds of things when you can truly be passionate and loving the Lord, and then all of a sudden it takes this slight turn where people appreciate that about you, and you like it when people appreciate that. You got to be oh so careful that you don't let your passion and love for the Lord suddenly become a passion and love for yourself. So if you are any of those things, if you have bitter, or something that I didn't get, if you have bitter jealousy or selfish ambition, then James says you are being arrogant. He says, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. If you're attempting to put on good behavior and yet bitter jealousy and selfish ambition reside within you, you're being arrogant. You're thinking that you can accomplish truly good deeds when your heart is full of evil intentions, like just what James had previously been discussing. Not only that, you're lying. You're lying against fundamental basics of scriptural truth. It is impossible to accomplish good deeds that are pleasing to God with a wrong heart attitude or motivation. Excellent quote by John MacArthur that I read on this topic. He says, quote, "There is nothing more characteristic of fallen, unredeemed men than being dominated by self. James is therefore saying that if a person claims to belong to God and to have the wisdom of God, but his life is motivated and characterized by selfish ambition and bitter jealousy, he's simply lying against the truth. Whatever he might claim, he cannot be saved. He is a living lie." So what this is talking about, there's two elements to be paying attention to here. There's one part which is you are truly a believer in Christ. You long to love the Lord, and yet you wrestle with having bitter jealousy. You wrestle with having selfish ambition in your heart. And then there's a life which cares nothing for the things of God. There's no struggle. There's no battle. It's just all bitter jealousy, all selfish ambition. There's those two coins here. And that's what John MacArthur is talking about. Someone who is all bitter jealousy, all selfish ambition, there is not a shred of love for the Lord in his or her heart, then clearly they are living an absolute total lie. And for us as believers, that should be a challenge to us. Why would we ever want to get close to that? The God who has sent his son to die for us, who loved us so dearly to rescue us from judgment, and yet we still continue to live for ourselves. We continue to put our own ambitions and aspirations above the will and desires of God. It's a complete flip-flop of what God desires for us. So the practical application is, where's your heart at? Consider, do I have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in my heart, and to what degree do I have it? Do I see a battle? Do I see a struggle? Am I seeking to overcome it? Am I seeking to fight those difficult motivations, or is there no struggle at all? So then, moving further, we have letter C then, the characteristics of false wisdom. James says, all right, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, you're being arrogant, you're lying against the truth, all of that encapsulates false wisdom. Not true wisdom, false wisdom. We're not talking about wisdom that has to do with the fear of God anymore. We're talking about something completely different. He says, this wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but it is earthly, natural, and demonic. Instead of being knowledgeable of the Lord and living according to that, it's to be knowledgeable of the exact opposite, to be knowledgeable of yourself, and let that govern your actions and decisions. So we have number one, let's look at, all right, so what is James talking about when he's calling this earthly, natural, demonic? We have number one, of the world. That's what the first word really entails here. And do we not see that? Selfish ambition and bitter jealousy encapsulated in our world system. I remember multiple times, both in my workplace and in other areas of life, where a professor or someone who is in management or simply a fellow coworker has come to me. I've been discussing, you know, things that I want to do about my future and where I want to go and all those things, and they say the phrase, you need to do what's best for you. We also have movies, classic Disney example that we love to rage on here at Grace Community Church, but for good reason, following your dreams, following after your heart, whatever you want, that's the way to go. Dream big and accomplish it. Doesn't matter if anyone else gets in your way, or does it? Who knows? They never really deal with that question. They tell everyone to follow after their own aspirations, but what if their aspirations conflict? Well, you're on your own, I guess, is what they would say. But that is what the world says. It's okay to be passionate about the things that you want. It's okay to be passionate about whatever it is that you desire. You should go for it. That is truly wise, is what the world says. But second of all, it's natural. We have number two, it's of the flesh. It's that second element. It hits a little bit closer to home, is a little more scary than just being of the world, is of the flesh. It's what the sin nature does. The sin nature within us automatically, naturally tends toward whatever it is that we want. Being bitter when we don't get what we want, and being ambitious and trying to strive for our own greatness. 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, but a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. And then finally, we have number three. We have the word demonic, and it's of the devil, of Satan himself. I mean, how does he tempt Eve? He offers her wisdom that is supposedly higher or the same as God's wisdom. She is convinced that she can attain a status of being and knowledge that is higher or, at the very least, equal with God, and she desires it, so she takes and eats. bitter jealousy, selfish ambition. Genesis 3:5, Satan says, "For God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." But then we also have another arena in which this is of Satan. We have 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 13 through 15. Paul says, in discussing false teachers, he says, "For such men are false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds." See, remember, this is within the context of you should be proving yourself to be truly wise by having good behavior, right? And Satan disguises himself as looking righteous, looking good on the outside, yet within, there's nothing but evil. Satan and false teachers will attempt to look good on the outside, but inwardly they have this earthly, natural, demonic wisdom. And ultimately their deeds, even if they might look good, will still be the end of them because God sees right through it all. We have no hope of achieving any better if we hope to live like that. So, in recap, to prioritize yourself above everything is to prioritize yourself above God. Even in attempting to maintain some kind of good behavior on the outside, that's fundamentally evil. It's to accept the greatest lie of Satan, that you are of utmost importance, and that you will somehow come out all right in the end if you simply pursue what you want. No, that's earthly. It's natural. It's demonic. And even if we might seek to accomplish those things with that kind of seek to be doing righteous, seemingly righteous things with a wrong heart motivation, at the end, we are assured of judgment. Matthew 7:21, where Jesus say, not everyone who says to me, "Lord, Lord," will enter the kingdom of heaven. There will be many on that day who are convinced that they did things the right way. They were able to get what they want, but they were still also able to do enough things that looked good that they'd be able to get into heaven. They claim Christ's name, "Lord, Lord," and yet Christ says, "Depart from me, I never knew you." He says, and specifically in Matthew, "No one who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter." The will of God is not your own zeal for yourself or your own desires to be realized. It is for God's zeal for himself and his own desires to be realized. That is what it means to walk with wisdom and understanding. So that's the characteristics of false wisdom. But next we have letter D, the consequences of false wisdom. Verse 16. James says, "For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing." So number one there is disorder. You guys have probably figured that out. Chaos, tumult, disturbance, absolute uproar. It's what we consider when we think of disorder. We have every evil thing. I love, when I was looking at this, I found a great definition that was trying to encapsulate everything that that word behind every was meaning. It said, totality while focusing on individual components. This is big words, but essentially, so you have the idea of discussing every evil thing, like, in, you know, you have things in movies or books where it's like the master of evil, like all evil, all the evil things, and it's like you just have this idea of like this dark, ethereal, no, it's bad. And yet, when we're talking, we need to try and get our frame of mind, when we're talking about every evil thing, we're talking about all of it, but then you see every single individual piece. So we're talking anger, greed, pride, lust, murder, lust. I already said lust. Theft, blasphemy, sexual morality, laziness, disobedience, on and on and on and on and on. All of it. Where there is selfish ambition and bitter jealousy, there's disorder, chaos, tumult, absolute uproar, and there is every evil thing. Is that not what we see in society today? We have people that have no idea what gender they are. We have people that have no idea what they should do with themselves, what they should do with their lives. They're being told to go every single other which way, being directed by the culture of the world. We have very crazy political things going on. We have very crazy social things going on. We have military conflicts all over the place. Nothing but conflict and evil. And really, you don't just need to look at today's culture, today's world system. You can just go back to the beginning to look at the consequences every time somebody sought to act according to selfish ambition or bitter jealousy. Satan's fall. Satan aspired to the place of God. And he fell. He took a third of the angels with him, beings that were created pure and perfect to do God's bidding. He took an entire third of them. Chaos. Adam and Eve, they thought that they could attain to God's knowledge. They fell. Plunges the entire world into chaos and disorder and all kinds of evil. Cain and Abel. Cain was bitter and jealous against his brother, and so he killed him. The Tower of Babel. The descendants of Noah refused to scatter as the Lord had told them. They aspired to something higher with selfish ambition in their heart, and so they started to build a tower. They settled on the plain, began to build a city, and God had to judge that. Absolute chaos. Probably, and it would have been absolutely amazing to be there, to watch as everyone suddenly stopped understanding each other, just like that. There couldn't be a greater kind of chaos. And that's just the beginning of history. As you continue to go on, you see every time someone chooses their own passionate desires or is ambitious and aspires to something higher than themselves or something higher than the Lord, there's disorder, there's evil. But, verse 17, the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. We'll come back next week to discuss all this a little more. I'm not wrapping up yet. We still have some more things to cover. But we're going to dive deeply into a discussion of these characteristics of wisdom. But for now, I want to just hit these very briefly. And then we'll have some more discussion after that, and then we'll close after that. So we have letter E, the characteristics of true wisdom. Some questions for you. Maybe if you have some blank space, that might be helpful. We see here first that James says that the wisdom from above is first pure. So is your wisdom, which is based upon a fear of the Lord, is it pure? Are you innocent of wrong? And the next would be, are you peaceable? Do you desire to live in harmony with other people? If there's conflict, do you desire to resolve it? Or at the very least, as far as it depends on you, you're not going to cause any more conflict. Are you peaceable? Are you gentle? And the word behind this involves, are you kind? Are you tolerant of things that might irritate you, but they're not sinful. They're just not necessarily what you would prefer. Are you gentle and kind towards those kinds of things? Are you reasonable? If you are very sure of a certain fact, very sure of a certain line of thinking, whether it be theological or not, or just a way that you ought to, this is the way that you do this. Are you easily persuaded that perhaps your position on a certain issue is wrong? Or should at least be considered? If someone comes to you about something, are you willing to listen to them? Especially if they have a concern about seeing something that might be going on in your life? Are you full of mercy and good fruits? Are you filled with compassion towards other people? A desire to be merciful towards them? A desire to restrain yourself from having feelings of anger, having feelings of bitterness, having feelings of just simply being upset at someone for something that they have done. Instead, be merciful. Or when someone is experiencing tremendous harm and difficulty, are you compassionate towards that? Are you tender towards that? Does your heart break when you see other people's hearts breaking? Even if you're not necessarily super close to them, do you have a concern and a compassion for other people? Are you unwavering, free from bias or prejudice? You're impartial in your decision making. Instead, you're only concerned with what is true and what is not, and you're not going to let anything else influence how you make your decisions. You're unwavering from the truth. But then to top it all off, are you without hypocrisy? And all of those things, are you maintaining the right heart motivation? Is all of that genuine? Are you being sincere? And so really we come to letter F. I'm sorry. The reiterated maxim, M-A-X-I-M. Verse 18, James says, "And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." Our family loves to do gardening. We haven't done a lot of it recently. We do some. And my dad loves pepper plants for obvious reasons. Salsa, I have heard, I've not tasted it myself because I'm not a hot person, but his salsa, I've heard, is some of the best salsa you can get. So it's a plug. It's a plug for you. When you're going to plant things in your garden, you think of, very clearly, you think of the plants that you want in your garden, and you go find those seeds that have to do with those kinds of plants. And then you plant the seeds, and then if you do things right, which a lot of times, sometimes it's very difficult to do things right, or even you do everything right and it still doesn't work, but if you do things right and God is gracious to your soil and to your seeds and to everything that goes on, you'll get those plants. And the plants will be exactly what the seed was supposed to make. Sometimes there can be complications with packaging, but we're not going to talk about that. Just at the most fundamental level, if you have a seed that says that it's going to produce a pepper plant, then when you plant it, it will produce a pepper plant. Very clear, very obvious. But there's a reason that James uses the idea of fruit, and the reason why the translators add the idea of a seed. Just as there are pepper seeds that produce pepper plants, there's a metaphorical righteousness seed that produces righteousness and nothing else. And you can't have righteousness without the righteousness seed. They're inextricably linked. No one plants something that they don't want. You go out, you pick what you want, and you get the seeds for what you want. In the same way, no one is going to plant righteousness unless they want righteousness. The only one who plants righteousness seeds, as it were, are peacemakers. Righteousness is done in peace by those who are defined by peace, and only believers can be true peacemakers. That's what ties all of this together. Number one, true faith works. So, some questions for you. Going back to the very beginning, are you wise and understanding? And I hope you figure this out by now, but if you are a believer in Christ, the only answer is yes. Because what is wisdom based off of? A fear of the Lord. And it is only a fear of the Lord that truly brings that brings about salvation. You're never going to cry out to the Lord, repent of your sin, and ask to be saved if you don't fear him. So if you are a believer, then you do at least have some semblance of wisdom and understanding. you're not saved, these characteristics of true wisdom are impossible, however. So I ask you again to check your heart. You can mask it before other people, but you cannot fool God. Next question. Are you practicing gentleness? Do you know the other people, at the very least in this room, and then spreading on beyond that, in this church, your family, your friends, other people that you interact with? Do you know them well enough that when you engage with them, you can help them love the Lord better, you can help yourself love the Lord better, by appropriately using the right kind of tone, interacting them and communicating with them with the right kind of body language in a way that they will most easily respond, whether you have some encouragement to bring to them, you have some important discussion to bring with them, or you're just enjoying life with them. You know what they enjoy, and you're putting them before yourself. You're being humble. Are you practicing gentleness? Next, are you harboring bitter jealousy and selfish ambition? Are the things that you long for and you realize that as you haven't gotten them, you've gotten angry, or perhaps the very thought of not getting it makes you incredibly upset? That could be a sign of bitter jealousy. Do you have selfish ambition? When you are seeking to accomplish things that look good on the outside, do you have ulterior motives? Do you instantly jump to, who's watching me? Who's paying attention to me? It could be a sign of selfish ambition. And lastly, do you long to exhibit the characteristics of true wisdom? That list that we read. Perhaps you are a believer here, but you see that based on all this, you need to grow in wisdom and understanding. I know myself, as I considered this passage, especially as I looked at where is my heart when I am considering my own desires, I know that there's so many things that I'm passionate about, and yet, is that passion directed correctly? Am I passionate because I love the Lord for that thing, or am I passionate because I love myself and it feels really good when I get that thing? It was very challenging for me to consider. Or perhaps you are an unbeliever, and yet after some of the discussion that has been had tonight, you long to have the right kind of wisdom, not this earthly, natural, demonic wisdom that causes nothing but pain, nothing but suffering, only brings about evil. You see that this is what is good. This is the right kind of wisdom that honors the Lord, and you've never had that before. Whether you have it and need more, or you don't have it at all, James calls you. Everybody turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 5. But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Being gentle and learning to put others before yourself is incredibly difficult. In fact, it's impossible without the power of Christ, without the wisdom of the Lord that is based upon a fear of him. And you need all the wisdom you can get. I need all the wisdom I can get as I continue to go through this life. And we have the greatest treasure store of wisdom that we could possibly ask for at our beck and call, if we're asking for it with the right heart. God longs to provide wisdom to those who ask for it. So next week, we'll come back and we'll look at the specific practicality of wisdom as seen in verses 17 through 18. But again, I would ask you, consider your heart. Consider whether you are truly wise and understanding. If you long to grow in wisdom, cry out to the Lord. If you long to have wisdom in the first place and be saved, cry out to the Lord. Since he is the source of all wisdom, crying out to him for it is the wisest thing you could ever do. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank you for this time that we can have to look at your word to see true wisdom, that it is born out through good behavior, through deeds that are done in gentleness, that we should be so careful that we do not become ensnared by the world's idea of wisdom, this false wisdom that brings nothing but destruction, nothing but chaos. Instead, we should strive after the right characteristics of true wisdom. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to consider where we fall when it comes to the wisdom that we are yearning for, the wisdom that we are living according to. Are we fearing you? Are we growing in our knowledge of you? And are we living according to that? Or do we just know ourselves really well? We know what we want. We're passionate about what we want, and we're going to go for that. And I pray that you would help us to see that this false wisdom, it only ends in destruction. And yet true wisdom brings about glory to you, salvation for ourselves, and absolute joy, the only true joy that we could ever have. In Jesus' name, amen.